The cinema specialists are back, and today we are talking about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and Society of the Snow, J.A. Bayona's newest movie, which was nominated for an Oscar for Best International Film. Breaking down both of these, and for those of you who are just joining, we're only going to be finishing out Phase 4 of this Marvel Cinematic Universe watch, so we only have two episodes left after this, and then we are going to be switching into something different, although at the beginning of March, John and I did decide that we're just going to talk about Dune anyway, so we will be doing an episode on Dune Part 2, and we'll be doing an Oscar predictions, and we'll be doing all of that fun stuff, so there will be some stuff still coming your way related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe before we get into our last, you know, our new series. I can't think of the word. New series. Thank you to me. But yeah, so today, Doctor Strange 2, Society of the Snow. Will be interesting to see how many people care about this. In the month of March, for those of you who didn't listen to the last episode, which I think you should go back and listen to the last episode, in the month of March, we're going to be doing brackets. Those will start. We're only going to do three of them. So that will start beginning after the week where we do Dune Part 2 and we do the Oscar predictions. We know what two of those topics are going to be. So put in your topics. Let us know what you'd like to hear us talk about, because we are open to that third topic. We are willing to listen and hear what you all have to say and see if you have something that you'd rather hear us listen to. Okay, that being said, I guess we have to start with the, God forbid, foreign language film.
Oh, no.
Society of the Snow, a movie that I didn't even know was coming out. And I love J.A. Bayona. I swear by The Impossible and The Orphanage. Didn't even know this movie was coming out. And yet it came out and it got an Oscar nomination. And it's the first one of J.A. Bayona's movies to get an Oscar nomination for best film in some category, because his other movies, The Impossible, somehow didn't, which still bothers me to this day. And The Orphanage never got anything. So here we are. What do you got?
This is a movie that I saw like on my Netflix feed. I was like, oh, I wonder what that's about. Never looked into it. Mm-hmm. Then I found out it was J.A. Bayona and I was a little interested. I was like, okay, I can get into this now. And then it got nominated for Best International Language Film or Best International Film this year. And I was like, maybe this is worth watching, because I kind of saw it and it felt like it was like a documentary type thing. And I was like, okay, I don't really want to watch that. Which is, I mean, it's the curse of Netflix, right? Netflix does not do what it needs to do to promote films, because this was a very interesting watch. I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it provided, you know, enough realism to really engage you in the story while still keeping you a little bit outside of all these, like, things that are happening in it.
Yeah, and so I will say, if you don't know the story of this, look up the story before you listen to us talk about it. It's based on a true story, and it is a very accurate depiction of that true story. I highly recommend that you go on the Wikipedia, go on all these different websites and read about this. I actually knew about this story beforehand. I was talking about it during our prop bet game that me and Will were talking about, the prop bet game. And I said the Dahmer party, and Will got all mad. He's like, the Donner party, because I'd just been insulting him for being wrong about everything. But this is actually one of the most famous stories about cannibalism to survive. And it's an unbelievably disturbing story, but it was one that I knew about prior to going and watching this movie. So I knew where this was going. If you don't know the story, go check it out. It's really, really insane. It's just an incredible true life survival story. A lot of these people are still alive. They were at the Venice Film Festival when this premiered. Like, that's crazy to think about. So go check that out. But I still think J.A. Bayona does a great job of putting this out and creating this film and directing this film. One thing that I was very fascinated by is he doesn't filmify anything. I don't know what the better wording for that is.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, though.
This is such a matter of fact telling of this story. And if you look this up, he is almost 100% telling it in the order it happened, as it happened, who died when. Every single person who died, their name pops up in the order they died in real life. The only thing that he takes liberty on is when they find the dead bodies. They didn't find those dead bodies until later on, But in the movie, for the movie's sake, they had it happen earlier so that it was like a little bit more of an inciting incident. But those dead bodies, they didn't actually find till later, meaning the people who fell out of the tail end of the plane. Right. Other than that, this is almost 100% by the book. And I was really impressed with how this movie did manage to feel like a documentary, but kept me invested like I was watching a fictional telling of a story.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's what Jay, I think this is the second time we talked about Jay Bayona on the podcast. We talked about The Impossible, and I think it's really clear. He has this understanding for the human will to survive and can portray it in film like no other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Impossible is the best version of that. The Impossible, in my opinion, and I don't know exactly if I don't remember like exactly what you consider a disaster movie, but The Impossible might be the greatest disaster movie ever made. And if you haven't seen that movie, check it out with Ewan McGregor, Tom Holland's first big performance. Naomi Watts got the Oscar nomination for it. It's an incredible movie and it's just so well made. And that one is definitely a little bit Hollywoodized. I love it. It's in my top 100 movies cleanly. It's not even close to falling out. But it is Hollywoodized a little bit. There's a little bit of like, you know, drama to it. He did everything he could. And what I actually really appreciated about this movie was every actor in this movie is actually from Uruguay. So really? He was criticized. It always makes me laugh when people like this get criticized. J.A. Bayona was criticized for making the family white instead of having them be Spanish when he made the movie The Impossible. Well, J.A. Bayona is from Spain. J.A. Bayona is not the one who's in control of that. So don't hate on J.A. Bayona's movie, a movie directed by a Spanish director, because Hollywood pretty much forced him to make it a white family because of the names that would be associated with it. But for this movie, Netflix went with the decision to make everybody a Uruguay actor, and it really pays off. There's not a single recognizable person, which makes it so that you really don't know who's going to live and die throughout the movie, because quite a few of them do end up surviving. And some of those people who survive, you really spend almost no time with throughout the film.
But even with that, it still felt like you knew all of these characters throughout the film, which is impressive because it's an ensemble cast. Yes, there are a few characters we focus on quite a bit, but at the same time, each of these characters has their own distinct personality and purpose in the cast, where, and obviously, again, like, it's a true story. These are real life people and they did play a part in this, but it never felt like anyone was just there.
Yeah. And the narrator of the movie, and we'll get into the whole narrator thing, because that's a big spoiler that I don't want to spoil. But the narrator of the movie even says at one point, we all play our part. We all had our part to play in this. And I think that this movie does a really good job of expressing that, even down to the fact when they get in the plane crash, you have the guy explaining to them where they are, why it's happening. Everybody had a part to play. Now, the one thing I didn't like about this movie was the opening. The first 20 minutes, I was like, whatever. I know where this is going. I thought it was cheesy. J.A. Bayona, don't make a sports film. Okay. Honestly, most people don't make a sports film. Sports films are very hard to make, especially nowadays. You know where they're going to go most of the time. But J.A. Bayona, don't make a sports film, because I thought the rugby stuff was cheesy, corny. I get it had to set up the story and it had to be like almost overly optimistic because of what was about to happen. But as soon as that plane starts to go down, for the rest of the movie, I was absolutely hooked and could not turn away, because the characters are just so well developed, even to the point of the ones you don't know, you can feel, oh, what's going to happen with this? What's going to happen with that? It's a very disturbing movie. So definitely go into it preparing for it to be very disturbing, but it is just a incredibly, incredibly well-made movie.
And especially like, this is the second time the story has been made into a movie.
What was the first one?
Alive from 1993, starring Ethan Hawke.
See, and that's where it's a problem, right? It's like, what is the point of Alive from 1993 with Josh Hamilton, Bruce Ramsey, Ethan Hawke? They're all playing Uruguayan rugby team players.
Yeah. And a lot of the criticism for that first movie is how it kind of condemns them for their actions. And what I really appreciate about the way J.A. Bayona treats this is he emphasizes the fact that they have to eat people. And he emphasizes that moral conflict that these people have about it's their survival. And it's not like they're like killing each other in order to feed each other. They are feeding on the dead. Mm-hmm. But he leaves that moral question there for the audience. And like, there's that hint at towards the end of the movie where he leans more towards like the, it's a miracle these people survived out of it. But he's never there condemning them for their actions at all.
Well, most of it is that they're all condemning themselves for doing it because mm-hmm. they are disgusted with themselves for what they have to do. But the big, it's really a great, like it's that moral thing, right? A lot of them are very religious. This is set in 1972 Uruguay. So like, you have to think like whatever the most prominent religions in Uruguay were, this is what these people are thinking as they're going through this. And eating another human, it's against the law. It's all of this. And like when they start talking about that, and it's like, well, I have my right to survive. Okay. Mm-hmm. But think about how many people say I have my right to survive on an everyday basis when they're stealing food. That's still committing a crime. When they steal something, like, are you stealing? Are you are you committing a crime by eating and carving up another person? It's so disgusting. So I just wanted to. Before now, I am going to preface this right now with spoiler warning. Okay, so that's at 11:20, and I'm even going to put that, I'm going to timestamp spoiler warning so that people cannot complain. Okay, John, yeah, I know we're going to start using timestamps. We're growing up as men here.
Wow.
Okay, so there's your spoiler warning. I just gave you 15 seconds. You had plenty of time. I will timestamp. Honestly, we're just going to be talking about this the rest of the time. So if you didn't know, I'll timestamp when Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness starts being discussed in case you don't want to know this. That's it. You've had your time. The fact that this movie is narrated by the last person to die is one of the coolest decisions from a storytelling perspective I have ever seen in a movie. Mm-hmm. I loved that decision, because as I'm watching the movie, I'm sitting there saying to myself, what do I care about this guy more than anybody? And the way they're telling you the story at the beginning, you're like, oh, because he's not on the rugby team, I wasn't supposed to be here anyway, right? That's how Hollywood would glorify it. However, that's not the route they go. Instead, it's this is going to be the last one to die. Here's the most insane part, and they don't tell you this in the movie. And obviously we're going to talk about this more thoroughly, but I looked it up of this guy. He weighed, and John, I know, and you've been very open with it. I know you've lost a lot of weight and you've been talking about like your weight loss and all of that. And it's been amazing to watch your journey here. You have lost more weight since October than this man weighed when he died. He was 55 pounds.
Wow.
55 pounds when he died. That is insane. That is absolutely insane. So when you start to look at that, obviously they're never going to make an actor look like he's 55 pounds. Like Christian Bale in The Machine is pretty much the closest you're ever going to get to somebody being like unhealthily skinny, because he pretty much is. But 55 pounds, and he survived for 60 something days. When you start to think about that with this movie in mind, it is incredible. When you think about the human spirit and what this movie is really saying for it, and what makes this movie better is it's not glorifying anything. It's not Hollywoodifying anything. It's just making a damn movie. So go ahead. You're up.
Go ahead. I really appreciate that part of the movie, because when it happened and when he dies, I was just like, this is baffling. What type of decision is this? And then I didn't even realize until you just mentioned it, he was the last one to die, and how important that was, and how he's the catalyst to actually make the people who do go to get help go to get help. His death happens, and then all of a sudden everyone's like, no, we're going right now, like this is happening, because he was the person, he was essentially their leader in this entire thing. He was the person, and like
he was their moral compass is really good,
and that's right? Really what it comes down to. He was the person that everyone went to and asked for direction, had to like to figure out what was going on. He wasn't the one making all the decisions, but he was the one whose opinion they respected the most. And to have that heavy weight of, oh my God, I can't believe this character just died. And to go into this movie blind, not knowing that, I really hope you all heeded Phil's spoiler warning and like dipped out on that so it wasn't spoiled for you, because most of the time when you watch a movie like this and there's a narrator, you know that character is safe to the end. And this is J.A. Bayona just being like, screw your expectations. I'm making this film. And it is so powerful because of it.
So powerful. And yeah, like I love that decision. I think it works perfectly for the movie that we are watching. And like, it's after he dies and he gives them permission to eat his body, essentially.
Yeah.
That's when he drops the line of everybody had their part to play and they show like a piece of meat.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one who kept them alive long enough to clear the Andes and get out.
Yeah.
And that's just incredible when you think about that. I what's crazy is, and we talk about this all the time when we talk about movies, is like they have technology and stuff has ruined drama in some instances for the better, right? Because if your plane crashes in the mountains, you are going to be found pretty quickly in today's day and age. Doesn't mean you're going to be alive. I mean, these guys were lucky that their plane crashed the way it did so that they could survive it. But your wreckage is going to be found very quickly. The last time we had a plane crash where stuff wasn't found was that flights
Malaysian
in Asia.
Air ones, right?
Yeah, Malaysian Air, exactly. There were two of them back to back. I was literally on a cruise ship when one of them happened, and we were like, wow, we're living real life lost. I hope our cruise ship doesn't get lost. But you really get to see how at a different time, in a different era, there's just so much we've learned in 50 years as a society and as a world. Globally, we've learned so much in these last 50 years. This is the type of drama I'm glad we've removed, because as exciting as it is to watch the human spirit thrive and survive and do that, 16 people survive 72 days, which is absurd to think about. I'm not mad that this probably couldn't happen to anybody else ever again.
Could you ever be mad about that?
Like what's funny to me is it's like, oh, we're going to make a movie about this because look at the triumph of the human spirit. It's like, we don't need triumphs of the human spirit like this.
We have technology. It's fine. We're over triumph now. Yes. It's just so the way this movie, everything about this movie really brought me in. You had your complaints about the beginning of this movie. I get that. And this movie's long.
It's 2.5 hours.
It's 2.5 hours. It feels like 2.5 hours. Which I think is intentional. I think Michael Carroll said it earlier that a lot of the criticism is it drags in the middle, but it's that idea of like understanding what these people are going through. They're literally stuck on in the mountains, not knowing if they're going to survive. And they have no, like, there's no end in sight. So, it's good for us to feel that way. One really interesting decision that J.A. Bayona makes in this that I think is under kind of like not discussed enough because of how the opening is. We don't get a contrast of these men in society versus the society they create.
We get that moment on the field of he won't pass.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, okay, they're not a good team. But that's it, right? Like, it's not really telling us anything about how they're interacting in society. We see them passing a note in church. It's not a lot to give us an idea of this. When we look at these classic tales of survival and, like, the lost of the world, if we look at Lord of the Flies, right? The whole point of that being English prep boys is that they are a staple of society, that we know how they're supposed to act in society. So we see the contrast in how they act on the island. In this situation, we're not given that context. And it's a risky decision. I'm not 100% sure if it pays off. But what J.A. Bayona did was he was convicted to not having that contrast in the film. There's discussion about, oh, we wouldn't do this elsewhere. It's just it's all the moral discussion. None of it is about the real world versus this world. It's just the philosophical and the moral discussion about it all.
I think the biggest thing in this movie is that the two shots prior to them crashing or getting on the plane are the two scenes. It's on the field, and then it's in the church. And I think setting that second scene in the church is really important, because that does set the tone for the fact that these men are very religious, that they care very deeply about God and where they stand, like what their eternal place is, and how people are talking about, like, you know, I'm not going to eat that person because, like, you know, that is not the godly way to do things. So it does get into that. But I will say that this did not make me feel that the discussion was the important part. The morals were important, as they're always going to be in this situation. But I felt like this was probably one of the truest survival tales ever told. Yeah. It's just about survival. It's about what would you do to survive? There is that moral conversation. There's that moral conflict. There's the Strouch brothers who will just go and cut up the bodies so that people don't know who they're eating when they're eating. Like, there's those moments. However, this really is just about, will they survive?
Yeah.
And what will they need to do to survive? And I think that's fascinating. When you think about, they crashed in the Andes. What is that, the second or third highest mountain range in the world?
Yeah.
And maybe it's fourth. I don't know. But it's, I think it's the highest in this hemisphere.
Definitely the it's the highest in South America. That's for sure. The
highest in South America. There you go. When you think that they crashed there, and two men who had eaten nothing but human for the previous 60 days or whatever it was, had to cross those mountains to get out. It's just unbelievable. Like, it's just unbelievable. And I'm very happy that this movie didn't go for the fake, oh, they were walking and somebody fell, or oh, they did this, or oh, they did that. The fake drama between the people. There's no fake drama between the characters in this movie. It's all very real, and there's not like fake arguments for the sake of drama, which I really, really, really appreciated.
Yeah, that is a big thing, is that there is no, we don't have interpersonal conflict in this movie at all, which is really interesting, because a lot of the, again, a lot of these like isolation stories, we've talked about it with isolated horror, we see people turn on each other. It's kind of that manufactured drama of the setting, right? The cabin fever of it all. We don't see that here. We just see these people working together to survive. The biggest arguments they have are this like discussion of, hey, is God going to forgive us if we eat people? Is it even legal for us to do this? Who cares? We just need to survive. Biggest argument we have in the entire movie.
Yeah.
And because of that, we get to focus on the survival aspect of it. There are moments in this film where your heart sinks for these people as they're walking towards the tail section for the first time and they realize they can't see the plane.
Mm-hmm.
That is a devastating moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you realize, okay, like they aren't going to be found. That's that. Like they are not going to be found. And that's why they ultimately have to go out and figure out a way to get found. And again, like those little moments, like that's a massive moment in the movie, but it's such a small moment when you're reading it on the script. Right. And that's handled so professionally and so perfectly by Jay Bayona. And I just like, you know, when you look at somebody like Jay Bayona, he's directed, I think, five big time movies, if you want to go there. What'd you say?
Big movies, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like pretty much, if you really think about like what movies has Jay Bayona directed, he's done The Impossible, Society of the Snow, The Orphanage, A Monster Calls, and Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. He has some shorts. He did some episodes of Rings of Power and all that. But the only big budget movie he got was Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Like he got to direct that. It's a terrible movie. It is what it is. Like, what are you going to do? Actually, I didn't hate that one as much as other people did, but it doesn't matter. When you look at his other movies, it's like this guy doesn't miss. A Monster Calls was okay, but that's really more of just like the source material really isn't all that exciting, especially from a movie perspective. But he has a great eye. He really does know what he's doing. He's 49 years old. Get this man more work. Like, get this guy more stuff, because this is a Netflix movie. And I know, like, here it's a Netflix movie because it was made and the Netflix bought the rights. It wasn't made by Netflix. It's not a Netflix original, as they like to slap on everything. But hopefully this helps, because it was like, when I watched it, it was like the number 8 trending movie on Netflix of that day or something. Yeah. Hopefully that is making it so that J.A. Bayona becomes a little bit more of a household name, because he directed The Impossible 12 years ago. He directed The Orphanage 17 years ago. I need more than 5 movies in 17 years. I'm sorry. Especially when one of them is Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah. I you look at the way he directs this film. You look at the way he blocks his actors. You look at the incredible cinematography of this film, because this film is stunningly gorgeous.
Yeah.
In the, like, to capture this mountain range like this, where there's the line later in the movie when they finally scale the ice wall as they're going west. And it's just that line, or wait, are they west or east? I don't know, whichever way they're going to escape everything.
They have to go back towards, they have to go back towards Argentina. So they're traveling east.
Right. No, they're going towards Chile at the end. Right?
Yeah, so that's when they're going west. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're going west and they stop on the top. And it's kind of that heart-sunken moment of the fact that there's so much more mountain range. But the character's just like, it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And it's that, and J.A. Bayona captures it so well in this film, where they're in this terrifying, harrowing situation. And yet it's filled with all these beautiful shots of this, like, gorgeous area. There are people in the world thrive to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Just like not in this exact situation, of course.
Yeah, of course. And you want to be there on a vacation.
Yeah, but it's captured so well that you're just in awe as you watch this film.
Yeah. Yeah, I really felt that too. And it almost made me wonder, how did they film this damn thing? Mm-hmm. Like, how did they pull this off? So look, it's not gonna win Best International Film.
No.
Or could it? No, because
No. Zone of Interest is
Zone of Interest is in there. Yeah, yeah. Zone of Interest is going to win. And I finally saw Zone of Interest. So if you're a patron, or if you want to become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist, $10 patrons are getting our Best Picture stuff. And we did Killers of the Flower Moon drop today. And then next week, we're going to get into Maestro, Oppenheimer, then Past Lives, and then Poor Things. And the last one will be Zone of Interest, which is March 4th. It just started releasing around here. And I went and saw it at a really small movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
What a great art house film. But these two movies are totally different. And yeah, while I think Zone of Interest automatically wins because it was nominated for Best Picture, Society of the Snow is the type of movie that Oscar voters love. It's and true. The second biggest comment, second most popular comment on Letterboxd is from Vitor, V-I-T-O-R. He said, if this was an American film, it'd win like 6 Oscars, but you people are not ready for this conversation. I kind of believe that. That's Yeah, I don't think it's one of the best movies of the year. I mean, this was a great year for movies. Like, it's 3.5 stars, but there were a lot of 4-star mm-hmm. movies this year. But I agree with him there. And I do think that if Zone of Interest wasn't nominated for Best Picture, and if these two movies were just going head-to-head and people could say, oh, I'm going to sit down and watch a Netflix movie, so I'll see Society of the Snow, then I'm going to watch Zone of Interest, I think Society of the Snow would actually win, because I think more people would like that, because this is what Hollywood tends to like. This is what it's that – have I said it enough? It's the triumph of the human spirit.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You're right. This is exactly, it's that story that the American film viewing audience really, really loves. They dig it up. And because it's that story of the grit and the determination to keep going. It's mm-hmm. that's a very fascinating comment about, and it makes sense. It makes sense. This is a movie that probably should be further in that conversation, but unfortunately, the Oscars always spoil that category for us.
They do. Willie D says Oceanic Flight 815, never forget. So just never do. That is the true triumph of the human spirit. Anyway, you have anything else you want to say about Society of the Snow, or should we move on?
Watch it. It's on Netflix. You probably all have access.
It's the easiest thing you're all going to find. So just sit down and watch the dang thing. And then go watch all of J.A. Bayona's other movies.
Actually, I do have a question. When you started watching this on Netflix, did it default to the English dub?
Yep. And as soon as I heard the first voice, I said, that's not a real actor. And I just skipped.
Yeah. I was just like, changing this right now. Oh, yeah. Don't watch that was a pain.
Dub, guys. Dubs are so bad.
Yeah.
Especially, big pet peeve of mine. Dubs of Spanish to English are so bad. Same thing with like Korean or Japanese or Chinese, those to English are so bad. Like, if you're going to do European, if you're going to do German to English, it kind of makes sense because, you know, like if that's how you're going to watch it, at least there's a little bit more of like orally, it sounds a little bit similar. The voices, everything, like it's similar. The like a romance language though, like you cannot watch that dubbed because then you're going to sit there and you're going to watch this guy and you're going to know what his voice is supposed to sound like because you know what that language is. And it's going to be like, I went to the plane. And you're just like, nope, that's terrible. Whereas like Air East Ein Mann, that's okay if you're German, you know?
The big thing is like knowing that a lot of languages focus more on tone than English does.
Mm-hmm.
And once you realize that, when you listen to a dub, you just miss out on a lot of nuance in
absolutely.
Film.
Absolutely. All right, we're moving on.
Yeah.
30 minutes, 45 seconds. Doctor Strange. Hang on. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Here we go. We have two more movies after this left in phase four of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The sequel to Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange has been popping up in a whole bunch of different people's movies. So it's not like we haven't seen Benedict Cumberbatch in a while. Benedict Cumberbatch. That's his name. And I'm not going to forget it. This movie for me is an interesting. I gave it 1.5 stars because I don't feel the need to be nice to these movies anymore.
Okay.
But what's kind of funny is I didn't mind the story. Like the story was whatever. Like it is what it is. Scarlet Witch is kind of like cringy as a villain, but I get like, I kind of think it's a cool idea of like Wanda being overtaken by Scarlet Witch, wanting to have a family, all of that. Biggest takeaways are America Chavez does not matter. Still don't understand why they care so much about America Chavez. Doesn't feel real to me. Second, this movie looks so bad. I know I say that a lot on this podcast. I could not believe how bad this movie looked. If you are a Ratchet and Clank fan, it was my review. Ratchet and Clank Future, the series that first came out for PS3. Looks just like this. And then there was the movie. It wasn't a Rift in Time. There was another one where like Dr. Nefarious is doing whatever, but he's able to like time travel and stuff. And I actually think that might've been those series. It looks just like that. Everything is way too smooth. You can tell that they are looking at a green screen. You can tell that the green screen and there's little props that are moving alongside them. It's so bad looking. And I couldn't believe that because, look, I've complained about the CGI in some of these. I thought Thor looked like this makes Thor look like Lawrence of Arabia real. Like, it's so bad. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, oh, well, it's a dream sequence. Maybe I'm being too hard. And they started getting into some of the non-dream sequence stuff. And I was like, how is this what we're doing? It's too smooth. It can't look that smooth. When it looks that smooth, it's so fake. Willie D's about to hit us with a list of pros. I don't know what he's going to say. You're up.
Or is he saying that there are no pros?
Yeah, he just left it empty. That could be what he's stating.
But yeah, I mean, the CGI in this movie is terrible because Marvel, Disney stopped caring about CGI. We know that. That's why Disney's CGI artists have unionized now because Disney doesn't care anymore. And you need texture. You need design. You need to put time and effort into creating art. Crazy concept, but it needs to happen. And there are times where I almost forgive this movie for not looking great. Almost. But there are these massive action sequences that just look terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think Willie D is saying that there are no pros because he didn't say anything. Yeah, I think it's just frustrating to me because you know the budget behind these movies is massive. Yeah. I mean, this movie had a really big budget. You're 100% right. You said the right word. It's texture. Mm-hmm. Texture, texture, texture. Why is there no texturing to this? It looks like they're running in front of a TV screen. And that's fine. If I'm in a Best Buy or whatever the Canadian, I don't know if you have Best Buys in Canada.
We do, in fact, have Best Buy in Canada. Okay.
Look, I don't know, man. They've been going out of business everywhere. So whatever it is. But if you're in Best Buy and you go to the home entertainment section and playing on a TV is something that looks like the opening of this movie, but you're not seeing the characters. You're just seeing like the planes and the moving and like whatever. Fine. That looks cool. You're selling a TV, but we're not selling a TV. You're supposed to be selling that they're in another universe. And that really, really, really irked me. Like it really, really bothered me to the point where it took away my enjoyment of the movie. It was so distracting for me a lot of the time. look, I always said that Doctor Strange, the first one, it's just it's overdone with how much CGI there is and the special effects and everything. And it gets in the way, it clutters the movie. But in this one, it felt like they backed off on some of it. And when they were using it, it made a little bit more sense. They wanted to make more of a human movie with Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch and Wanda and, you know, America Chavez, as they call her. But they did that at the expense of that. And like, you know, I don't know if you paid attention to this. I'm trying to get Will to talk about it on the Phil and Will show tonight. So if you want something to be excited about, everybody. But have you seen Sora? Do you know what Sora is?
No.
Open AI, they announced it today. That text to video. And it's like these minute long things and they look so real. It's frightening. It's seriously like we're at that level where all of a sudden it's gone too far.
Yeah, all of a sudden,
as Jeff Goldblum says in Jurassic Park, you kept asking yourself if you could, that you didn't stop to ask yourself if you should. That is how I feel with this. And when I watch this movie, I'm like, but maybe like something like Sora will get Disney to start taking their backgrounds a little bit more seriously, because a movie in 2022 shouldn't look like a video game anymore. A movie in 2022 shouldn't look like, if you ever go down, if anybody gets a chance to go to Orlando, which by the way, if you ever do, message me, email me. I do sell Disney vacations, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. I get paid a percentage from Disney, so it costs you nothing extra. And if it's like your once in a lifetime trip and you're wondering, where do I stay? What do I do? Let me know. Shoot me an email, because I can help you plan all of that. I can get everything set up for you and make sure you don't miss anything. But if you ever go to Orlando, Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind is one of the greatest attractions ever made in the history of any theme park. And I've been to a lot of theme parks. It is an incredible attraction. And a lot of that is, there's a lot of screens in there. There's a lot of things, but it looks so damn real. Why does Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind, which is a roller coaster, have screens and stuff that look more real than the CGI being used in billion-dollar movies, in movies that are supposed to make $1 billion? Doesn't make any sense to me. Bothers me significantly.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. But alas, here we are. Let's talk about the rest of this movie, because I think there are some interesting things in this movie to discuss. First and foremost, this is a movie that was kind of riddled with production issues. Obviously, COVID happened. That made things very difficult. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, there was a director change in this movie. This is the second time we've talked about a major director change in the MCU, the first one being Ant-Man. But we still had a lot of Edgar Wright in Ant-Man after he had left. This one was supposed to be directed by Scott Derrickson, who did the first Doctor Strange. Most people will probably know him from doing Sinister.
Yep.
And he's replaced. And a big part of this, you also have to know, is like the lead up to this movie, the MCU... really, like, Marvel and Disney and the marketing for this movie really tried to emphasize it was going to be a darker MCU movie. It was going to be leading into a horror-esque MCU.
It's actually listed as sci-fi / horror.
Yeah, well, it's not, because it's not horror at all. But it could have been there.
Like a zombie.
She does. There's an undead Doctor Strange, clearly horror movie. Who do they replace Scott Derrickson with? Probably the absolute perfect director to direct a superhero horror movie in Sam Raimi. Someone who is renowned for the Evil Dead series and Spider-Man. It should be a marriage made in heaven. And the moments in this film where it is unbridled Sam Raimi are fantastic. Too bad everything else sucks.
Yeah. So here, let's throw up some Willie D comments here. He does have pros. One of the darker MCU movies. Some of the fight scenes are cool. Con, CGI is awful and America Chavez sucks and almost everything else. And biggest flaw is America Chavez not being able to control her powers at the beginning. And then at the end, the solution is essentially try harder, which is very funny. So I do want to talk about the Sam Raimi of it all, because I wanted to bring that up first and then get into this. This movie has a 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd. Most of the movies in phase 4 are like 2 point something. Even No Way Home was like low 3s. If Sam Raimi's name is not attached to this movie, all of his fanboys go away, and this movie is like a 2.5 on Letterboxd. So I just find that very funny how Sam Raimi's name carries that much weight for John and people like John. And don't tell me it doesn't.
To be fair, to be okay, I'm going to take this criticism.
Bruce Campbell didn't make this movie go up half a star for you.
I mean, yes, Bruce Campbell's literally the best part of this movie. But I'm going to flip this around on you because I have been living this world where I thought I hated this movie. I thought I hated it. I was like, man, that movie was really not good. And I watched it today with like that expectation that it was not a very good movie. And I was like, huh, I kind of like this a little more than I thought I did. It's probably like a 2-star movie. I went and looked at my Letterboxd review, and my original Letterboxd review for this movie was a 2.5.
Wow, so you actually dropped it.
I actually dropped it. I have been living a lie for the last 2 years. But the point being, though, is like, does the Sam Raimi of it fanboys? Sure, it probably brings out fanboys. But again, like the Sam Raimi aspects of this movie, the moments where you get the physical humor, the use of reflections. Sam Raimi loves using reflections in his horror movies. And like those type of things, they worked so well. Like it just felt, but the problem is it feels disjointed with the rest of the movie because you can tell the points where Sam Raimi was involved and they either did reshoots or he had taken over at that point and the points where Scott Derrickson was doing it. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of what's wrong with this movie, in my opinion, is Michael Waldron's script. I think the script's atrocious. I think the dialogue's terrible. I think the story itself has too much going on and doesn't focus enough on any like particular things. And it's very much thing as they try to get a MacGuffin.
Yeah, and I know I said that the story didn't bother me, but that doesn't mean I liked it. The script is so convoluted. It's so convoluted to get to the point that you're trying to get to. And obviously, like, I never watched WandaVision, so I don't really know, like, what I'm missing out on there or anything like that. And the America Chavez thing just feels so thrown in there. What is she so worried about with America Chavez? What is America Chavez? So, like, I don't understand what America Chavez is really trying to accomplish, and I don't really understand what a significant threat she poses to Scarlet Witch.
She doesn't. Because the whole point is that Scarlet Witch wants her powers so she can transverse the multiverse.
Yeah, and so what do Doctor Strange and Wong want her for? Just to stop Scarlet Witch from doing that? It's like nonsense that they protect her in the first place, though. Like, that defies logic. There's no reason for it.
I know.
So like, my thing is, like, it's convoluted. It's all over the place. I mean, I gave it 1.5 stars. The Sam Raimi of it is, Sam Raimi's very hit or miss for me. You know, like, I really like I mean, that's how it is for a lot of people, except for the people like who just love every single thing he touches. I think the problem with this is like it wanted to be a horror movie, like it wanted to be darker, but by having Sam Raimi attached, to me, that's going to make it a little bit sillier than I think they originally wanted it to be. Because when Benedict Cumberbatch is zombie Strange and he's talking, I'm like almost laughing at that part because that's how Sam Raimi films that stuff. He makes that kind of comical, and the makeup and all of that. I respect the makeup there. I think it's awesome. Yeah. But like, that's not what they wanted that to be.
It's not, but it's what the movie should have been.
I agree with that, but it's not what they wanted.
I know. And like, that's the issue. That's the greater issue with the MCU when they bring in these big name directors in the first place. They bring in these directors. They're like, oh yeah, we want you to do this. Oh wait, don't do it like that. Mm-hmm. Like, we still want, this is still our movie. It's not your movie. And that's the disappointing thing about this movie to me, is if this movie was more in the vein of like an Evil Dead 2, heck, even like a Darkman.
Yeah.
This movie would be so much better.
Yeah, and that's what it felt like it wanted to be. It felt like it wanted to be Darkman. And if you haven't checked out, we actually did a review of Darkman when we were doing our top 100 films. Go check that out. We still have the whole playlist of our whole top 100. So if you haven't checked out any of those, make sure you watch them because they're very fun. And Darkman is a wild ride, and that's what it felt like this movie wanted to be, even though it didn't quite get there, because it's still a massive budget Marvel movie. Like, it's still a huge, 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 huge Marvel movie.
It's just the mistake that Marvel keeps making, and they've made it over and over again. And we're finally at a point where, because of you know, legal proceedings that have happened with some of their actors that they cast, they kind of have to rethink of how they're doing things moving forward. And hopefully we're finally at a point where they realize they don't need to do this anymore. They don't need it to be this big budget, extravagant thing. They don't need everything to be interconnected anymore. We are living in a week where they finally announced the Fantastic Four casting. And that's
been, were you excited about that or no?
Was I personally excited for that? I was interested in it. I'm not excited for any MCU announcement at this point. I also don't really like the casting that they did.
But well, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. Did you like the casting or not? Is really more of what I was asking.
I mean, I get to watch Vanessa Kirby on screen. I'm not going to complain about that.
Yeah, I love it, Vanessa Kirby at this point. I mean, I like Pedro Pascal too. Why have people like turned on Pedro Pascal? What happened?
It's not so much that people are turning on Pedro Pascal. It's just like the character of Reed Richards doesn't seem like the best character for Pedro Pascal to play. Now, and a lot of that stems from this movie where John Krasinski plays the character of Reed Richards because there was so much fan speculation that he would make the perfect Reed Richards. And that was just a thing. And that is another thing that I don't like about this movie. I enjoy the Illuminati aspect of it. I think it's something that it was never explored in the MCU leading up to this. It is a very pivotal part of Marvel Comics. We're starting to get into like some deeper lore with that, but it's cool. It's interesting to see. But the Illuminati that they give us is very fan servicey, and that was my complaint about Spider-Man No Way Home, is how fan servicey that movie gets at sometimes. And as much as it's as incredible as it is to see Patrick Stewart in the yellow wheelchair, like, couldn't it have meant something more to the film? Because that scene is just there, and it doesn't do anything to progress the film.
Yeah, no, I totally, totally agree with you there. And I mean, I was surprised when they went into all of that and it's like, oh, it's Captain Carter. And instead they show the real Agent Carter, the one at least from that universe. And then they have Patrick Stewart as, you know, Dr. Xavier, and he's doing his regular universe. But then John Krasinski is whoever, and we don't know who that is. And then Captain Marvel is a different person. And then we see whatever the tuning fork guy is, who we don't know. We haven't seen.
Oh, actually, so this is Phil. We haven't gotten into this, but I'm because I forgot to warn you before this movie. WandaVision isn't the only television show this pulls from. This also pulls from the Darkhold. Was originally introduced in season 3 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. alongside Ghost Rider. And Black Bolt is actually one of the Immortals, which you may or may not remember was a very short-lived, it was going to be a movie, then it was like an ABC series that was abruptly canceled because of how bad it was.
Never heard of it. Those are new words as far as I'm concerned, John.
I figured, but so people did know who this character was, but they're just not like the every person who was watching this
movie. Yeah, I had no idea. And it felt random, and it felt like they were pushing stuff together. And you're right, it was fan servicey. What are they doing? And like, I don't necessarily love it, especially then when like, what's Chiwetel Ejiofor's name in this? What's his character's name?
Baron Mundo.
When it's like the same Baron Mundo across all planes and across all universes, but then all the other characters, some are the same,
Mordo.
Some aren't.
It's Mordo, not Mundo. It's Mordo.
Mordo. I don't understand that. Like, I don't get that. And to me that I get that there is no explanation for it, but that's another one of those things that just feels so unbelievably forced just for the sake of doing
it. It just feels like they didn't understand how they wanted the multiverse to work. And at this point, Michael Waldron was a writer on WandaVision. He was a writer on Loki. So he is handling the writing for the multiverse stuff in the MCU. But it feels like they just didn't have steadfast rules for how it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I agree with you 100% on that. Do any of these characters at all ever come back? Like, have we seen America Chavez since? Like, was America Chavez in something prior to this?
No.
That makes it even crazier because when that started, I said, oh, John did warn me that like there were going to be things pulled from the TV shows. And I just assumed America Chavez had been pulled from one of the TV shows because there's so little explanation on her.
Nope. No, they just don't develop the character at all. They just don't. They just decide, because America Chavez isn't a character in this movie. America Chavez is a plot device.
Yeah. Okay. So is America Chavez in the comics?
Yes, this is an actual Marvel character.
Okay. Okay. So they're not, because for a second there, I was like, well, was this like pandering of like, we're going to name her America?
And no,
like,
no, no. Actual character in the comics.
So it is. Okay. Okay. That's fine. Yeah. I just wasn't sure if that was, you know, something Disney was doing, because they really, after COVID, like they really just started going all over the place. Yeah, I don't know. Like the America Chavez character is weak. It's bad. Whatever America Chavez does in the comics, hopefully is more interesting than this. Otherwise, I don't know how they didn't know to just throw this out right away. Like it's just boring.
One of my biggest complaints about this movie is it bills itself as this big multiversal movie, but they don't treat it like a multiversal transversing movie, right? Like this could have been this should have been like a science fiction movie, essentially, right? Like a space Trek type movie. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know I butchered.
You mean Star Trek?
I wasn't going to say Star Trek, but I kind of said it and I realized it sounded terrible.
New movie. Like,
you know, a movie where you go like a planet hopping movie, right? Where they've already done that with the Guardians of the Galaxy. But we don't get that here, right? Like, we don't have any of the world building. We essentially have them going to two universes, but one is like just whatever the heck that final battle was, which, whoa, we haven't even gotten into how much I hate that final battle.
Yeah.
But.
Well, and I will say this, John.
Yes.
This movie, for the second time in a row, and I enjoyed No Way Home a lot more than I think a lot of people. Mm-hmm. However, for the second time in a row, this movie is just trying to be Into the Spider-Verse.
It is.
That is what these movies were trying to be. They were trying to copy the success of Into the Spider-Verse and bring it into real Marvel movies, not in association with Marvel, but real Marvel movies.
Yep.
And it wasn't working. It just they did not understand what the magic of that was. And the magic of it wasn't jumping through time and going to paint world. When they did that part where they went through all the different universes, I was like, oh my God, like they're literally just copying and pasting at this point. They're not even trying to hide it.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because I think what they wanted to do with the multiverse is they wanted to rectify some of their mistakes. They wanted to make it so that they had options to bring back actors they had killed off.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear that's what they were doing, right? They were just like, hey, no, we can do whatever we want now. It also gives them the opportunity to explore a lot more of these stories without them impacting the MCU. And that, I think, was a big thing for them. It was like, hey, we have all of these characters we can use, but we can't use these stories because we have a set rules in this universe. But by introducing a multiverse, it gives you the opportunity to be like, oh, no, it's just happening in a different universe. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true. And that seems like what they're doing, because then there's no rules of who's the same and who's different and whatever. It doesn't matter.
They're trying to undo the thing that made the MCU such a big deal in the first place. And it's kind of hilarious.
Yeah. I do want to take this second, since we have people still watching. If you've watched this far in, you definitely like this video. So go like the video. If you haven't liked the video yet, you made it this far, please like the video. That's going to help us. We want to keep building the Cinema Specialist into bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think what we're going to do in March is going to be so much fun that we're going to have more friends talking about movies. So like the video. And if you haven't subscribed yet, subscribe. If you're listening 53 minutes into the Cinema Specialist, you need to be subscribed and you need to be liking this video. Willie D says No Way Home is significantly better than Multiverse of Madness, but yes, Spider-Verse is definitely a tier above. Yeah. I mean, we talked about it. If you haven't watched our reviews of Spider-Verse, like we sat down, we watched Across the Spider-Verse. We kind of talked willy-nilly about Across and Into. They're so much better than these movies.
Yeah.
Like they really are so much better. And I don't think Marvel's going to ever capture what it is that makes those movies so magical.
No, because they don't understand it. They don't understand that it's about,
or they do understand it, but they don't want to put the effort, the time, the budget, the artistic sense and merit into it.
Yeah, that's true. And this movie, because of what it's dealing with, I think when the director changed, this movie was a movie that should have been delayed, but they couldn't delay it because of like its implications for the greater MCU.
Well, and COVID. They'd already delayed so many movies. They were backlogged. They couldn't do it.
Yeah. But one thing I do want to talk about is the whole WandaVision of it all here, because I mean, you come into this movie not having watched WandaVision, all of a sudden Wanda's evil and has children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was your reaction to like just like finding out all this stuff about Wanda?
Feels forced.
Okay.
Like that was really it. It was just like, it feels forced. I don't know why I'm watching this. Like, whatever. But like, then I didn't mind that the Scarlet Witch, like how they introduced the Scarlet Witch, because I understand that Scarlet Witch is a real character and this is a real storyline. But yeah, it felt forced. It felt like it came out of left field out of nowhere.
Yeah, it does. And I, as much as I really appreciate Elizabeth Olsen's performance in this film, I think she does this great job at being this terrifying character. And I probably comes from having a horror director.
She's actually a really good actress. I mean,
yeah, there's that aspect too.
Not everything. Yeah.
Yeah. But the problem is the character, again, it goes back to the script. This character isn't fleshed out enough. And it's like, oh, well, you already saw a show. Even for those who have watched WandaVision, this feels like a major, like, out of left field for this character.
Yeah.
The Darkhold is introduced in the post-credit scene of that show.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't make sense. None of it really makes sense. And for people who didn't watch WandaVision, the last time we saw this character, she was mourning the death of Vision. But yeah, she's like, this man.
And that's what she has that one line about that of like, I put a bullet in his head and whatever, and it didn't even matter, and it all accounted for nothing. And it's like, oh yeah, I forgot that was the last time we saw her. Mm-hmm. Also, like, way to say that so late in the movie that, like, I kind of forgot.
Yeah. It just didn't develop the villain. And we also have this, like, weird, like, the tentacle thing that isn't.
I don't get that. I don't get that.
Well, and that's my big problem with it. Is like, they try to set it up like it is this like big bad who's controlling this person or this demon or whatever. And it's just, it's Wanda. It almost feels like they didn't want to put a twist in this movie when this movie actually needed a twist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Wanda family stuff did nothing for me. It just was there. It was a thing that
makes sense for someone who didn't watch any of the thing that led up to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Willie D says also at the end of WandaVision, she's like, oh no, I've been bad. Then switch to this movie. And she's like, I'm bad again. Well, I wouldn't know what that means because I didn't watch the movie. But
right. Sure. So like in context, Wanda casts a spell on an entire town. It is mentioned in this movie. And like controls it and makes it like old TV shows. WandaVision actually wasn't that bad until it got to the end. Then it became an MCU product again and it sucked. But essentially it's her controlling everything and being in control of everything. But she gets to that moral point where she's like, oh no, what I'm doing doesn't work. She stops that spell. And then we pick up the next time we see her and it's like, yeah, I'm evil. And I'm so evil that I'm going to like maybe destroy the entire multiverse.
Mm-hmm. I just shrugged my shoulders. I got nothing left. I got nothing left on Dr. Strange.
That's where we're at when it comes to the MCU.
Yeah.
Like it's so convoluted at this point.
Yeah. We haven't talked about two good movies in a long time. Like when since Spider-Man Far From Home and Saltburn, I guess Far From Home was like the closest. Cause then we did Black Widow and the Killer, Shang-Chi and Mean Girls, Eternals and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Spider-Man No Way Home and Argyle was last week. No surprise there too. That movie, that episode has gotten very little viewership. And I'm not surprised because Argyle was not seen by anybody because it was just panned universally and it made like no money. So if you want to go watch that one though, at least listen to us talk about Spider-Man No Way Home. I recorded that from Kansas City, so you can see the cool Airbnb that I was staying at while I recorded. But you have anything else you want to say about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness or no?
No, it's just another disappointing MCU film that had potential and it was completely squandered by Disney not caring about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So next week we move on to John's favorite, Thor.
No. I cannot defend this movie and I will not defend this movie next week.
John's favorite franchise in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, his favorite last movie, he said, Thor, Love and Thunder. Yeah, I can't wait. So we'll be doing that. That'll be coming out next week. John, what movie are we doing with it? Nothing.
I don't know. There's nothing out. Right? Like,
it's a disaster.
This has been, for this first 2 months, like we talk about it as like a drought when it comes to films, there's usually something that comes out.
There's usually something that surprises you. And right now there's nothing. There's nothing that's even getting hype around it. I mean, it's all Oscar movies that are getting re-released or like Zone of Interest and that you haven't seen yet. It's been terrible.
Mm-hmm. What backlogged movies are there? Is there anything that came out that we haven't talked about yet?
I don't know. Let's take a look.
You listeners and viewers are getting a live look at how Phil and I decide what movies we're watching.
Let's see. We could do... I don't want to find one that's like too old. Yeah. You know, I don't want to go like too far back. We never did The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Is that on anything?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know.
That's a great question. I don't think so. I don't think it's out yet.
Really? Or did like people just not talk about it? Let's see.
That's also a possibility.
It is on, it's $5.99 on Amazon Prime. Oh,
that's a lot of money.
That's more than I spent to go see The Zone of Interest.
I went to a movie for less than $5 on Tuesday.
What an unbelievable feeling, huh?
Yeah, it was wild.
I mean, we could do that one. That's $5.99. Anybody got any suggestions they want to throw in the chat that we haven't said? Like, I know like we're at the end now, so people are probably like, dude, we ain't listening anymore.
Anyone, any suggestions for movies that came out recently?
Bueller.
Because it's not this Bob Marley movie, because I refuse to see that movie.
I don't want to see that. I have no interest. It's not supposed to be very good. Like, no need to go watch that one.
No.
I can't do Aquaman, that's for sure.
No. What's even... I should actually just look at my theater and see if anything's actually playing right now.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. Maybe we need to go Netflix. Is there anything on the Netflix route that we should be doing, or like that's on Prime?
I don't know. I don't look at Netflix that often unless I'm actually like watching something. I tried to go the Prime and that is not how you get to Prime Video.
Let's see what's playing. So like if I were to go to a movie on, let's say, Monday, I could do do Madam Web.
That movie is supposedly worse than Morbius.
I've heard. Then there's Anyone But You with a Valentine encore for me. Lisa Frankenstein.
I actually saw Lisa Frankenstein this week. It wasn't that good.
The Beekeeper is still playing by me. I mean, did Lisa Frankenstein do any box office or no?
I don't know. I saw it. It was a Diablo Cody movie. It wasn't as good as it could have been.
This is how bad this is right now, though. This was last weekend at the box office. This is why we can't think of anything. Argyle, 6.2 million. Lisa Frankenstein, 3.7 million. The Beekeeper, 3.4 million. Wonka, 3.1 million. Migration, 2.9 million. Those are your five highest grossing movies. 6.2 million was the highest grossing box office movie this past weekend.
Literally every movie that is playing here is either one of these bad releases from this week or...
Willie D says Fresh on Hulu is in the cannibal realm. Look, that's not a realm I actually want to be living in. Okay.
No, please no.
Yeah, that's not actually a realm that like we're excited about.
All the recent movies that have appeared on Prime are all movies we talked about already.
Yeah, it seems like it because we did Saltburn.
Yeah.
Let's see. Next
Lives is on Prime now, though, guys. So everyone watch Past Lives.
Yeah, I mean, I have that. I can't wait to watch that. I'm actually going to watch that this weekend. I might actually watch that tomorrow.
It's about time.
You want to do the movie About Time?
I mean, that is a great movie. I don't want to, like, it's not a new release, but.
This is hard, man.
It is.
This is quite possibly the hardest we've ever had to do because there really is nothing out right now.
Trying to think if there's anything. I don't know. And the problem is like the movies that we missed are in that weird window where they're not released yet. Cause like something like The Iron Claw would be great to talk about because people rave about that movie, but it's not playing anymore.
Willie D says, Madam Web, please. I don't know.
Willie D, we can't do it. I can't go to Richard. We're already talking about Thor, Love and Thunder next week.
I can't do it, man. I can't do it. Let's see. That movie, the number one trending movie from last year on Netflix right now is Super Mario Brothers movie.
That movie is not good.
I watched it.
Is All of Us Strangers playing by you?
No, it's not.
That's unfortunate. It's playing here finally.
Well, you're all just going to have to tune in and find out what we're going to do, because I have absolutely... Oh, well, no, I don't think it's playing yet. Hold on.
Wait,
hold
what?
On. Pause. You know what's playing Friday night at the movie theater right by my house?
No, I don't, because I live on the other side of the continent.
Audition.
Oh, like the horror movie?
The horror movie. Audition, like, is playing on Friday night at 9. Next Friday, so it would have to be next week anyway. But on the 23rd at 9:30 p.m., it is playing. I'm very excited.
Movies actually come out next week.
I know, but I'm just saying I'm going to go see that movie. Like, that's exciting. That, like, I could see that in a
theater. I haven't actually seen that one. I need to watch that one still.
You've never seen it?
I haven't gotten around to it yet.
It's one of the most disgusting movies you'll ever watch.
I love Takashi Miike, but I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Here, is this on Apple TV? Is The Boy and the Heron finally on Apple TV?
Oh.
Let's see. Because I'm not paying $20.99 for it. No, it's still pre-order for $20.99. God.
Doesn't help.
All right. You're all just going to have to tune in. We'll figure it out.
You know what? Follow us on Twitter and you'll find out there.
Yeah, Cinema SPCLSTS. That's it. Cinema and then that. But thank you all so much for listening. Thanks for putting up with us here. As we said, after we finish these next two movies, we will be jumping in and we will be doing Dune and our Oscar predictions. And then we'll be getting into three brackets. And we know what two of the topics are going to be. We don't know what the third is. So leave us some comments about what you'd like to hear us talk about. We're all ears. And that's really all I got. So thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Sorry, the last 5 minutes were us babbling, but maybe you also have an idea. If you have an idea for a movie we should watch, please post it. Post it, because we'd like to do something recent, but everything is garbage. So just let us know. Bye.
Bye.